If for some reason while doing research for this, the entire time I was thinking about Princess Diana, because that was also in 1997.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't just randomly thinking about Princess Diana, but I remember that because I was so, so young. And I remember everybody on the turning on to see that happen. And I think I actually remember the funeral more than anything.
Yeah.
More than the news story of it breaking. This, though, also happened in 1997. And for those who were aware of it, it was kind of like the Natalie Holloway case a few years later in Aruba, where it was just supposed to happen, or there was this innocent place that was like a tourist location in British Columbia. And suddenly there's this dead girl, and the people who are being the main suspects for it are a bunch of teenagers.
And the media ran with it.
Yeah, that's...
The book talks about how there was so much misinformation at the time.
And that's where I was going. Is you've read the book. We're about to talk about Under the Bridge, the first two episodes. So there's an interesting story that goes along with this book. When it was originally published, I think in 2005, Reese Witherspoon's company came in and said, we're going to make it. At the time, it was Type A Productions. She's since graduated to Hello Sunshine, and you've seen a ton of those productions come. A kickoff, mostly from Apple. But this was 17 years ago, and May 3rd, 2007 is when it came out that she was making this series called The Bridge, or just Bridge, based off Under the Bridge. And can you imagine how different that series would have been then to what it is now?
Well, why would it have been different?
Well, I'm just saying TV has adapted such where we would have gotten like a different type of true crime. I couldn't even think of like what other true crime show you could have compared it to back then. Nowadays, you have a ton of like detective series coming now. First of all, Mansoor Spade, Tracker, Fool Me Once, Death and Other Details. But if you hone closer into what this story is actually about, you look at dual female lead investigators, True Detective Season 5, Deadlock, Unbelievable, that series from a few years ago that also dealt with angry teens and angry parents, Mayor of Easttown, which had a dead kid at the beginning, Twin Peaks has been compared to this show, and that was from the 90s.
Because Twin Peaks was compared to Under the Bridge?
Because it always starts off with a dead girl. No, that's not meant to be like rude or anything, but that's how it begins. Kids being mean is something we've seen more in the last few years, especially the way they depict those series like Girl from Plainville, Cruel Summer, Sane X, Defending Jacob, Scream, 13 Reasons Why, Scream, both the series and also the movies. All of them are kind of like cross-timeline storytelling of like how someone died and the motivations behind it. And no one is particularly 100% good or 100% evil.
In the book, it's very clear that people like Josephine, Dusty, Kelly, kind of part of this friend group that ended up attacking Rena Virk, they seem to be pretty much just plain evil.
Really? Because Dusty is supposed to be Rena's best friend. And I thought I thought that she, just on what I was reading about, because I haven't seen the series or read the book like you, was going to come across more, I don't know, reasonable?
That was shocking to me. She was the biggest character change from the book to the TV series. Dusty in the book was Josephine's Larry to Thad Castle in BMS terms. She was a guard dog to Josephine. She would do anything to kind of please her. And then the show decided to take her character and, yeah, make her incredibly friendly to Rena. Just like was the nicest one to her out of the whole entire group. She even starts to get really choked up when Josephine is explaining to Rebecca Godfrey in the second episode about the attack. She starts like running away and crying and even almost turns in Josephine in the second episode. That was all stuff that was just completely made up. Dusty does, by the end of the book, have kind of a redeeming story arc. It's shown that she did kind of turn her life around, but that's years later.
Okay. Was there any other major changes that we should be aware of if you haven't read the book?
Well, Rebecca Godfrey is not a main character.
You're saying that the person who wrote the book didn't stick herself into the story.
I was bewildered when at the reasoning to include the author and make her a main character that is interacting with other people from the book. I thought originally in the first scene when we get her kind of driving to town and we get a voiceover of her, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool that you're playing the author and kind of making her have voiceover narration. But no, she actually has her own subplot where she befriends Josephine and is completely okay with her smoking, drinking, and even going into detail about the attack, and decides to never call the police, even though a police person named Cam has kind of been questioning her throughout the full two episodes as to what's going on.
Well, it's not 100% too far away from the truth, because she did, once she heard about this thing, return to her hometown in Victoria and start investigating this whole thing for her next book.
But we never get that in the book. It's all third person.
I know you don't get it in the book, but she did think about it for a little bit. She just decided that she didn't want to get into her own life story and her own teen, because she felt like if she put herself into the story when she was doing these, because she talked to all these kids, she did get them to open up to her. She visited the juvenile facility that some of them
but
were
that was
kept.
After they were already in jail.
That's
the
true.
Show decides
she wasn't
to
part
do
of
it
the original investigation,
and that's why it's so hard to believe, because here's the thing: Josephine is smoking in the book, she is drinking, she is going to parties, but as an adult you would think, oh, the second that they're like, yeah, we attacked this kid and she's bragging about it, she would call the police and be like, yeah, these kids are crazy, come and arrest them.
Let's wheel it back a little bit, and you just give me a straight up synopsis of what these two episodes, let me get the title for them, Looking Glass as in a Mirror, or and the John Gotti of Seven Oaks. Okay. What is the whole story going on so far?
The first episode is Rena, a teenager eager to fit in, disappears after a party altercation under a bridge. Her family attempts to report her missing. They're initially dismissed by skeptical police. As the investigation progresses, key suspects emerge, leading attention and intrigue, and the episode ends with the discovery of some of Rena's belongings, leaving her fate uncertain. That was the first episode. Then the second episode, the first scene we see is that Rena, much like the book, she actually survived after being beat up by these six kids.
However, I do think that you should mention that she was like beat up so bad that people would have considered her like having been hit by a car. Like the injuries were almost as bad as that.
The book goes into detail. It was chapter 17. It was the same night that a Russian satellite across that town blew up. But yeah, when you talk about how bad she was beaten, it was to the point where it was surprising that she was able to get up and start walking again.
So had she walked home at that point and then gone to a hospital, though, she would have been fine.
I think she probably would have survived.
Yes.
I believe that's what the book says. But in the second episode, Rena's disappearance is investigated further. Josephine, the main suspect, reveals details of the attack under the bridge to the writer, Rebecca. And then her story raises doubts, however, because she was saying that she was able to leave and come home at a specific time. And Cam tests that theory and then realizes that that couldn't have been the case. But then at the end of the episode, Rena's body is found drowned.
And does that make them think, oh, Josephine did kill them? Or does it make the cops think she's saying that she did, but that's impossible?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what Cam is coming to, because she tested at 11:47 to 12 o'clock. That was when Josephine was saying that she got home. It was a 13-minute thing. But when...
A drive.
But when Cam is actually testing the drive, she makes it to her home at 12:04. So she's like, there's no way
she comes in late.
That this actually could have happened.
Yeah. So if you hadn't read the book, do you think that this series would have made a lot of sense to you? Do you think you would be more into it?
I would like it a lot more. It's almost like The Imitation Game. I know with that, you said that
I don't like docudrama.
You liked the film, though. But then when you read more about it, you realize just how much they changed. And it almost doesn't seem like it's the same story that this is telling.
But that said, if you just take out the Rebecca Godfrey being this early on in the storyline.
Taking out the Rebecca Godfrey of this storyline would make the show probably 25 minutes. they spent a long time on her.
And so someone said that there's a love story going on between Cam and Rebecca?
It's hinted at.
That's strange.
Yeah, it's hinted at the beginning of the second episode that they used to have some type of fling going on. I know also Rebecca Godfrey, I'm not sure if this was true or not, had a brother. I think his name was Gabe that died, and somehow everyone knows about it.
Yes, so that was based off her real brother who died when she was like 13 or 14 years old and drowned. And part of the reason she was able to reach these kids when she talked to them was A, she looked a lot younger than even her 30 years that she was or whatever. And she also was able to get into the juvenile hall facility to talk to some of them because she came in there disguised as a teen. And so she asked the warden for a tour, and they gave him that. And then as she was walking out, she saw someone who was there, because obviously there were other reporters all around, like trying to get the hit story, and they saw her and they were like, hey, how'd you get in there? And they're not allowing any reporters in.
But she didn't even try to disguise herself as a teen in the show. She's just supposed
to
be like,
I think they just cast young, and they cast Riley Keough, that's Elvis Presley's granddaughter, I believe.
Oh,
and
wow.
Also the girl from Mad Max Fury Road, Magic Mike. You saw her, Daisy Jones in The Six, main character from that. She was also in The Terminalist, which you watched. And then the other main, Lily Gladstone, played Cam Bent Bentland from Killers of the Flower Moon, but also Reservation Dogs. So okay. That's where you might know her.
But the problem isn't the fact that the show decided to add some things or change some things for dramatic effect. In fact, it even has at the beginning of the first episode, and I think the second episode, that text that comes up that says that this is based on true events. However, some things have been changed. But it's the fact that they changed so much. Rena Virk's family is really also the center point of the second episode, sure. Or first episode after her disappearance. And it's focused on so much more than the book actually did.
Well, that's because it's not just based on the book of Under the Bridge, which it makes sense why you would think so. It's also based on her dad's book that came out afterwards. That's Rena, A Father's Story, Manjeet Virk.
Was that like a response to Under the Bridge, you know?
Well, they had a good relationship, Rebecca Godfrey and the family. She was able to get accounts from them. She was even slipped, I think, the police records at the time before the book came out. So the book, I think, is really, really factual. So if you were to recommend it, or would you recommend it?
Yeah, I thought it was good. Again, you're going to have to get over some Gossip Girl parts, who and who like such and such. But once you are able to understand that, there's a reason why they're telling you it.
It's showing you the mentality and the perspectives from a lot of different angles. And that's what makes a good true crime, because it's not just a clear good guy, bad guy thing. And I think, well, let me just hear. There's some several facts that stood out while I was reading some quotes. And I just want to get your opinion on some of them. Okay. So you haven't still talked about how Rena knew these girls particularly. And that sort of happened at a foster home, right?
Seven Oaks. That's where the girls are staying at.
And so about a year ago, this was an article written right after her death. About a year ago, she ran away from home and was placed in foster care. And earlier this year, her father, Manjeet Virk, the same guy who wrote the book later, was charged with two sex offenses against his daughter and one count of uttering threats. The teen later recanted. Last week, her family said the charges were false, made by her daughter, by their daughter, in an attempt to gain more freedom by being relocated to a foster home. So she was, I know she had like kind of a restricted lifestyle.
She was Jehovah's Witness.
Her parents were. And so they made so she lashed out by accusing her father of sexual assault and then lived in this foster home.
There's some things there, though. One, like her parents were allowing her to paint her nails blue. And once she was really befriended by Josephine, that's what made her kind of and be part of this popular group. That's what made her want to do things that she didn't already do. In fact, the uncle in the TV show and the book kind of was very disturbed by what she was seeing, because she could tell that she was really changing her personality just to fit in with her friends. It wasn't actually how she felt. Prior to her meeting Josephine, I think that she was very respectful to her parents. And Manjeet, in the book and in the TV series, has a very favorable portrayal of him.
Yes, because again, it was recanted. Like, she took it back.
Right.
It's just weird that someone would choose to go to foster care. Like, I've never heard of a place where foster care was depicted as a place you would want to be. And from the sound of it, these other girls that were there were very mean, right?
Yes, they were.
So why would she choose that lifestyle?
Well, again, I think it was because Josephine, you even see this in episode 2, befriends her and is very nice to her at the very beginning.
And kids make some weird choices.
Also, Josephine, I don't think her mom was dead. I think she also chose to go to Seven Oaks.
Interesting.
As well.
I didn't know that. The Night Of, which has, I feel like, a similar thing, because the main character in that, yes, he's in college by then, but he's shown that his family is very religious, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's been raised where he's no partying for you or anything like that, no going out. And so then he sort of leaves and then ends up being accused of murder as well. So I just drew a connection from that. Let me give you another quote and see what you think of this one. Over time, Miss Godfrey gained the trust of those involved. Warren's girlfriend had kept a diary and gave it to Miss Godfrey. Even Rena's parents warmed to her. I did mention that. Someone slipped her the police file, and she drew heavily from the verbatim accounts of the children's interrogations for the book she was writing.
Yes, Warren's girlfriend being Sarita. Sarita was probably the most innocent out of any of the kids that were there. And I think that in the book, she's even talking about how Sarita would journal a lot of things. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
Also, weirdly, like, you would think that it wouldn't have a romance in a true crime drama.
Like I said,
not a happy romance.
Not a happy romance, sure, but kids are still doing crazy things. One of the bad things that Rena does do is continually calls Colin Jones. This is in the book.
Not Colin Jost. That's what I thought you said.
No, Colin Jones. She calls him over and over and over again. In the series, it's only once, but she, like, it got to the point where it was literally harassment, and she was just saying complete rumors about everyone.
Josephine, you would think that this Colin Jones guy would be like, I'm more suspicious of the person on the phone than I am of what you're telling me.
After a certain while, it developed into more than a crush, and I'm pretty sure that's probably what he was thinking.
Okay, but he wasn't part of the later on. He wasn't one of the...
He gets pushed to the wayside. He's actually the first chapter of the book. But after about the attack, I don't really think that they talk about him again.
There's another quote by the author here this time from Godfrey, who said, there's the famous Janet Malcolm line about how journalists prey on people's vanity and ignorance and then betray them without remorse. So they go in there and then they talk to these people and then they get out any information they can in any way possible, and then they just spill it to the world, right? Not twist it, but just spill it.
They can twist it.
And this is what the person, what Godfrey then said. I really disagree with that notion. I think it's very cynical and cold. I left things out of the book if I felt they would endanger or humiliate anyone. The story was good enough that I didn't think I needed to betray anybody.
It's interesting. She's not like nice to
anyone. I'm not saying that
people.
She's lying to them, but like maybe she did hear like some terrible things or things that I don't know. It reminds me of like Anne Frank's story and how like they've cut down or filtered out some of her other dialogue if they just don't think that it's more like not humiliation, but more just like her own personal thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's like you don't want to bring out a bunch of 14-year-olds' personal thoughts if they didn't have anything to do with this story.
I thought that really when it came down to pros and cons for the show, it dealt with the characters and how closely related it was to the book. So like I said, I probably would have enjoyed it more had I not read the book, but here are my pros for it. I only have a couple. Josephine is the most faithful to the source material from the series. The way that Chloe Guidry portrays her is also correct. She was evil is almost too easy a word to say. She was manipulative, sassy, egotistical to the biggest degree, which is why it was so surprising to see her actually befriend Rena, even though that did happen in real life. Rena is also a lot like her character from the book. The series focuses on Rena's past prior to her death. It's very closely related, even things like Notorious B.I.G. album, Josephine's obsession with John Gotti, which you do see, the chase of Rena on November 14th, 1997, before she goes under the bridge, even the small things during that scene, like her running into the telephone booth, that was all true. And Rena again was mostly innocent. And then we only get a little bit, tiny bit of Sarita in episode 2, but it was kind of cool if you knew the backstory, because what happened with her was just kind of tragic. She really didn't want Warren to end up going under the bridge. She even tried to get him to come home with her.
Yeah.
So that was cool seeing her there. But that's really as far as all my pros go.
Before you get to your cons, I do want to point out, like, so the creator of the show is 29-year-old Quinn Shepherd, and she worked for 2.5 years with Rebecca Godfrey on making this together. Mm-hmm. And then Rebecca Godfrey died of lung cancer like a week before it was greenlit by Hulu, I believe. And she had picked herself, Lily Gladstone, to play Cam. And she, again, was happy that Riley Keough was going to play her. So she was fully aware, and things that happened that you might not be aware of from the book did happen in real life. Like there's an iguana scene. Does that show up quite yet?
We do see an iguana.
That's true. That actually happened. So I think they're not trying to like completely manufacture.
My problem isn't even the fact that Rebecca Godfrey was a main character in the series. It was that she was interacting with actual people.
But that's what she did in real life.
But she did that after they did the crimes.
But pretty soon after.
Yeah, but here she's literally not calling the police, even though she's seeing these teens do unspeakable things.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about it. And so that's why I felt like Rebecca Godfrey, she was on my cons list, because she was just kind of unlikable when you see Josephine doing all this stuff and admitting to it. And she decides only until the end of the second episode to actually pick up the phone call at a party and dial 911. And then even when the officer picks up, she asks if Cam is there. Cam being an officer that wasn't from the book either. They added her character. And then when the person is like, Cam isn't here, can I take a message? She hangs up. She doesn't even tell the police about all the stuff that she's been learning about. And then Dusty, I already kind of explained, that change was very weird to see. It really didn't make any sense. Cam Bentley.
What did you think of her parents? Because not just her dad, but her mom was played by the lady who starred in Departure. She was also in Hijack, but she was the main character from Departure. Suman Virk is her character.
Are you talking about Dusty's parents?
No. Suman Virk. Burke, as in
her parents. Yeah, the parents, again, I thought,
because she's supposed to have like a big scene where she gets angry at her daughter or something.
She always does. It seemed like it in the book, because again, they were very Jehovah Witness. I think the scene that you're talking about was either in episode one, where she walks in the bathroom and she sees that Rena is, no, it was episode two, she's shaving her legs. In fact, that's the reason.
How dare she?
That's the reason. Yeah, no, I think it's something in Jehovah Witness where they're not allowed to do that. And so what Rena did was she goes to the store to get a razor and she's trying to buy it in secret. And then Josephine came in and was like, what are you doing? Those aren't the razors you should get, and hands him a man's razor. And she's like, this is a man's razor. And she's like, yeah, but it's sharper than women's. So that was kind of supposed to be showing them becoming friends. I think that was the first interaction that we got with them.
Okay.
But going with Cam Bentland, a cop who is not in the book at all, there were so many cops that played a part in evidence and interviews, just naming some from the book. Sergeant Poulton, John Bond, he was probably my favorite out of all of them because he set up the dive squad that tried to find Rena.
Huh.
And then you also had Constable Brian Cameron, kind of Cameron. I was trying to see if they were the same character, but Brian Cameron is a guy, so I don't
think
so.
Again, production-wise, though, it would be difficult to have a bunch of different...
And I understand that because there are a lot of different things. But my problem was that Cam Bentland, it seemed like they were almost giving her credit for coming up with all this stuff. When you know the actual story, she didn't set up the dive squad. It wasn't just one person. They didn't just find the body because she had like a gut feeling. This was done by different people. The people that found the body, Constable Chris Horsley and Ron Huck, they were responsible for finding Rena's body, as shown at the end of the second episode. Scott Green, among so many others. You don't have to have all these characters, but it would have been nice to at least have some, you know.
I know, I can totally understand. Once I've read certain books and then I watch the series, it's like, even if the series is highly acclaimed, it's very hard to distance yourself from that. You become biased towards wanting to see what you've read.
Well, and it's also the fact that it's based off of Under the Bridge. If it was based off of the novel that the dad did,
I think it's based on both. It's just taken the title from one of them.
Well, but perhaps the biggest thing is Warren and Kelly. Warren, we get introduced to right away in the book. He is a huge part of it. We only get two scenes with him in episode one and two, and with Kelly, we only get introduced to her at the end of the second episode.
Did you recognize Warren?
No, I didn't.
You wouldn't. It was the kid from Umbrella Academy in season three that was pretending to be the child of the guy who throws knives.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, like, halfway through, you realize that he's not even that guy's kid. But he's grown up. He's also from Euphoria. He plays a boxer in that.
I thought he did a good job. I even kind of like his scene in episode two because he was helping out Rebecca Godfrey when she was freaking out on the couch and giving her a drink, which was kind of like Warren's character. But perhaps the most shocking thing is, especially with the book, when it gets to the climax of the story, it's all about Warren and Kelly, and they have done very little, 25% of the way through the series, to even show them. We only get a couple seconds of
Fans do seem to be kind of onto that, where it's like, oh, Josephine is presented as the mastermind, especially when she says, I'm the mastermind, or I did it. But, like, first of all, do you think Josephine thinks that she did do it? Because, like...
So what happened in the book was Josephine was learning about these calls that Rena was making to Colin Jones, and then she did kind of come up with the idea. However, she also spoke to Kelly. Kelly was a huge part of that plan that they just decided to not show in the show.
Well, it does seem like fans have picked up on the fact that Kelly and not Dusty, but Warren were like a bigger factor into it.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the problem I have with it, which is like these people were huge. They were very...
It wasn't subtle.
They were very present in the first half of the book. The second half is almost completely about them. The book is split up into five parts, and part five, which again is the climax of the series, is all about them. So the fact that the show is only going to be showing them this little in the first two episodes is kind of concerning and making me really wonder where the show is going, but not in a good way.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, it's gotten pretty good reviews. I think it has like a 70 on Metacritic. It has like a 7.2 on IMDb. The only places that have like really kind of not been a fan are like a Hollywood Reporter, The Guardian kind of gave it middling reviews, USA Today, Wall Street Journal gave it a negative one. Everybody else, though, like from Roger Ebert to Slate to Paste Magazine, Collider, Time, like all of Decider, they're all pros. They like the show. I will end it with, I know you need to give your final review, but there is a connection that even when the book was released, it was compared to Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, which was like the first real, it pioneered the true crime genre because mm-hmm. it told the stories. He went from, I think, New York to Kansas with Harper Lee. which is weird to think that they were known to be friends, but they went together and started investigating this crime together. And he worked 6 years on it, was very upset when it didn't win the Pulitzer Prize. And it was doing this like horrific murder of a family in rural Kansas back in 1959. And this is the quote that Godfrey then said later on. She said, "They want to do Capote for girls, but I hadn't written my experience into the story. I don't know if it was an issue of ego or an artistic choice, but either way, I didn't think my role as reporter was interesting or necessary. I suppose I was also skittish about the parallels with my own life. I didn't want to talk about my brother's death or my own troubled adolescence in Victoria." So they did approach this. And I do think it's kind of interesting. Like, I'm not 100% against the idea of them including her. Had she just not existed, sort of like the Cam character, I would have been more against it, I think.
I think, to me, it's just, this has to be one of the least faithful adaptations of a book this year. And this is coming from someone who has seen Tracker, the Justin Hartley show. And I just couldn't get over it. I think that there are parts, especially when they're focusing on Rena's past, usually any scene with her in it, that they're pretty faithful. And I like those scenes. But aside from that, I cannot give it a good score. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 10.
Okay. Well, then I think that's probably going to be your widest division towards the rest of the critics and yours. But I think it's well deserved. You read the book. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.